Hey, Wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 437 of the JV Club with my guest, Liz Winstead. I have to say, this is back-to-back comedy legends, and I could not be more excited to have this woman follow Paula Poundstone as my next lady post-Boys of Summer. She is a powerhouse. And stay tuned in the episode because I wanted to push this episode out this week because she's got some very cool stuff coming up that you can watch in virtual time, in virtual real life. And check it out if you're listening to this episode on Thursday when it drops. There's something tonight that you need to check out. Check out those show notes for more details and listen to the episode. But again, could not be more thrilled to get Liz's perspective on a ton of stuff. So please enjoy the episode. I hope everyone is doing well, and I'll talk to you next week. Hi, person who founded and started all kinds of famous, legendary comedy and political kind of merging together stuff.
Well, wow. Hi. How are you? I mean, that's a broad thing. All of a sudden, I feel like, wow, did I? In between no one ever mentioning it. Except
well,
other women.
Let me work it in. Yeah. Oh, is that? Oh, man, that doesn't surprise me in the least. Well, especially if it's something that, you know, like something like The Daily Show in its very early stages with Craig, very different animal, the show and the person. And, you know, when you have somebody who's like, when the sort of forward facing personality is male, forget about it on the back end.
Right. Well, it's also interesting, too, because I've often thought and watched how the weird way sexism plays itself out in giving credit. And a show that men would want to have done, they don't want to give up the credit. But like, you know, and they don't invite you into the club as much. But like, you know, the woman who invented Spanx, she's on the Fortune 500 and she's doing great and everyone loves her. But but the woman who wants to take over Goldman Sachs, not so much, not as excited to invite her successes into the fold. You know, it's sort of these creative lanes of where you get to arrive
at
superstardom. You know,
that's a really
Oprah,
good point.
Great. But you know, like, you know, Oprah had a niche and if she just started taking away crap from men, I think it's a different stitch.
I mean, that's a really good observation, and I would also say, have you watched? I feel so embarrassed because apparently LuLaRoe was like a clothing sensation and multi-level marketing, like huge phenomenon, making billions of dollars in very short period of time. I had never heard of it, but now there's an Amazon Prom. Thank you,
Amazon Prom.
There's an Amazon Prom. They're doing it all now, Liz. You can go to prom with Amazon at one of their warehouses. Are you familiar with that, LuLaRoe? We don't have to talk about it at length.
No, I don't even know what it is.
So I think if you started watching the documentary, you might become angry semi-quickly. So maybe you don't even want to do it. But I'm fascinated by it because it was founded by an LDS couple, and my mom was Mormon, and I went to church with her as a kid until I graduated high school, and then I was like, oh, by the way, goodbye to that forever. But it the reason that I thought of it is that for the first couple of episodes, it's a multi-level marketing situation. It's like leggings and like comfy t-shirts and this and that, but you know, you have to buy the inventory and then you sell it, but really you're just recruiting people to be under you so that you can get their bonuses, your bonuses from that and all this. So it's a full-on pyramid scheme.
Ponzi scheme for
exactly right
and stuff.
Exactly right. Ooh. And what they started doing was shifting the goals and shifting all of the language. First, it was all about like being a girl boss and like stay-at-home moms being able to stay at home with their kids but also make money for the household, which was very inspiring to a lot of women. And then they started sort of targeting their language to be like, and you should get your husband involved because, you know, he's just going to think it's this weird thing you do if you don't. And you know what? Maybe you should give the financial control over to him. And like, they slowly started plugging in all of these old school and frankly still current school in many ways, Mormon sensibilities that are like, I mean, you're still the wife. You still need to stay home and you still need to, you know, say yes to whatever your husband wants. Like, it is chilling that it is cloaked in this very sort of like, hey, it's okay for you to be, you're an empowered woman. You can do whatever the fuck you want. If that means staying home with kids, there's nothing wrong with that. You can have your own business. Is this helpful? Yes, it is. This is great. You're going to be making money from home. So it's scamming you. So not only is it a pyramid scheme, but it is also enforcing these very old marriage tropes that essentially are telling women, like, at the end of the day, it is about pleasing your husband. Isn't that amazing? But you might want to watch it because it's very interesting.
I always want to watch that stuff because, like, there's not, I don't have enough rage layers in my cake.
There's always room for one more.
There's always room
they can,
for
you
one
can
more.
Squash those things paper thin and then you can just keep fitting them in and squashing them down into your body. It's absolutely doable.
God, how? What? Okay, I am going to watch it. Where's it? Amazon?
It's Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Right after you have your Amazon prom.
After
slip
Amazon
off
prom,
that dress.
I'm gonna do it.
And then
slip
watch
into
it.
Magical underwear and watch them.
And
how
slip
they
into your magic.
Sell magical,
I mean, it's
leggings.
A whole thing. It's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. I'm surprised, actually, that they didn't sell garments now that you say that. You, my friend, are from Wisconsin.
Minnesota.
You're from Minnesota. The two states where the funniest people come from is how I feel about Wisconsin and Minnesota.
I agree. There's a lot of that. And, of course, either state would set you on fire for that mistake you just made.
No, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. You're forgiven.
It's so funny because I was just thinking, I mean, I had the conversation with myself like, oh yeah, Minnesota. I've never even been to Minnesota. Let me bring up that I've never been in Minnesota. And then I still said Wisconsin. Which
it's okay. It's okay. You should come to Minnesota because it's
go ahead and set me on fire.
Far superior than Wisconsin. And it's
Believe.
Also,
okay, great.
Also, I mean, they have some creepy, we don't have Ron Johnson and people here are vaccinated and wear masks. So I feel
you don't have
that.
There are, that's a, oh, you don't have people who aren't doing that? Or
we,
you,
no,
or you feel
we have
like, it's
like one
good,
of the highest vaccination rates in the country. We're doing great. Yeah.
Yeah. I got to get up there. I'll be up there in maybe 24 hours. Let me see what flight I can hop on. How was it growing up there as a funny lady? I mean, that sounds so gross and stupid, but how did you feel like that was appreciated when you, for example, were like a high schooler and was that stuff showing itself at that point in your life or were you sort of, you know, keeping it in?
I was more the class cynic than I was the class clown even early on. Just because I had a lot of the things I loved were really just non-gendered things and everything was frowned upon, you know, and also just even like, I didn't like to babysit. I wanted to be an altar boy and make my money that way. And it was like, oh, you can't. And so I like took it really far. Like I went and talked to the priest and I was like, what can I do? And he did that thing that adults do, you know, when they're nervous. And so they just start rubbing on their pants, on the like, thighs of their pants, like getting the sweat off the palms of their hands. And in his brilliance, he literally said, well, it's called altar boy. And I was like, that seems like an easy fix.
Good
and
one.
I wasn't trying
Good
to be
one.
An asshole. I was just trying to be like, well, I can help you there. If I'm a girl, then you can just call me an altar girl. And then he was like, well, maybe you need to talk to the archbishop. And this was the best part, is that it was widely known in adult circles that the archbishop at the time was a raging alcoholic. In fact, you can Google this. He drove during Lent drunk into a 7-Eleven, the front of a 7-Eleven.
Oh, no.
Not doing great. So they knew that if I reached out to the archbishop, I was going to get no response, but it would be passing the buck.
Okay, couple quick questions about those two things. Number one, this isn't really a question. This is just more a, how am I, I'm 9 years old, and I did not know that you could make money as an altar boy.
Tips.
I had no idea.
Tips at weddings and funerals.
No. Okay. Had
tips.
No idea that there was a little money to be made.
Oh, it was like a secret.
Yeah. Oh, tips from. Yeah. Okay. So this is a revelation to me. And then second of all, and maybe you're going there with this, but in case you're moving off of the Catholic side of things, so interesting to be a part of a community that ultimately perhaps was not a fit for you. But within it, I'm always fascinated by people inside of religions who, whatever age, whatever reason, are trying to sort of change it from the inside.
Yeah.
Because that seems so futile to me. But people do it and people succeed at it. But that is something that I have, that is a real love it or leave it for me. Do you know what I mean?
I do. And I think that, the trying to change it from the inside part was the folly of youth.
Yeah.
I think.
And one of those dollars.
With an institution. And I also thought altar boys were like the gateway to priests. And I love the way that everybody liked priests. So I was like, oh, that seems fun. He's on a stage. He's talking uninterrupted. Maybe I want to be that. And it was like, you don't want to be that. Also, you can't be that. So I just kept getting myself stuck. But as soon as I realized that, like, there's no changing the institutional, fundamentals. When something is based on patriarchy and oppression, like, you're not gonna break its foundation and shake it to the core. And even the best pope, it's sort of like being the nicest serial killer. You know, it's like, you know, this guy's good. Like, oh, he believes in science. Right. It's like, shouldn't we all, like, do we pat people on the back for that now? You know, it's also kind of like, you know, the smartest supermodel or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just kind of was like, I just feel like I don't need to have like this oppression framework to be a good person. I feel like I have feelings. I feel like I know when I feel bad. I know when I've made others feel bad. I should work on not doing that because that also doesn't feel good. I don't need, Sky Daddy to tell me that. So,
Sky Daddy. It's a different compass. It's definitely a different, or it should be the same compass, but is not the same compass. It's a different moral compass. It should be the same.
But I also respect people who, when I see them doing really good works and they credit their religion, like that they are inspired through religion and that they, like, I love that. You know, there's a great organization called Catholics for Choice who work constantly on issues of reproductive health rights and justice through their social justice Catholicism lens. And they're really cool. And they're like, abortion is not talked about in the Bible. And so we're not going to judge people around decisions they make. Like, it's not our.
Oh, wow. Okay. So they're able to still actually refer to a holy text and make an argument through that, which I know everyone does if they believe in the Bible. Everybody's got can sort of find ways to use it as a tool. But it never occurred to me that a pro-choice group could lean on that as well. And that is quite impressive.
And they've risked, you know, they're standing within the church. You know,
it's like they could be excommunicated.
Churches that won't serve you communion. There's churches that say you're not really a Catholic, and they're like, no one's going to tell me what my faith is. Like, nobody. Yeah. And so I have the same text you have and the same interpretive rights to it. And I don't see what you see. And I'm living my life as a good person. And I'm like, all right, I like you.
For sure. For sure. And there's so much community that people become attached to for good reason. That makes it sound like I'm saying it's a crutch. If you have a tremendous community within your religion, and you feel like you're getting you whatever your spiritual relationship is with your higher power or what have you, if it fits comfortably in the form of that organized religion, that's wonderful. Agreed. I just don't have that. And, you know, maybe I will one day. Maybe I'll have a late breaking experience that, you know, sends me deep into the Universalist Church or something. I don't know. But it's interesting too, to say, you know, when we say things like, you know, anything that has its foundation in patriarchy and oppression is going to be a tough sell to change. Obviously, we're steeped in that and have been in one form or another for a couple hundred plus years in our own country.
Sometimes that
things are changing. Things change.
Yeah.
I know. Sometimes they change back. Yeah. So we'll see how that goes.
I know. I just feel like I was so mad for so long that, and then I was just like, just leave. Just leave
Well, that's
and
what I
be
was going to say.
happy.
Is there a sense to that with the United States of America? Because, you know, I remember I think I've brought this up on the podcast maybe once before, but Barbara Kingsolver, who's a lovely novelist who sort of splits her time between the Ozarks and Tucson, Arizona, which is where I'm from. So she's a bit of a local hero. I think her first essay in her book of essays, High Tide in Tucson, was after Bush. OG Bush, OG President Bush declared war, that she was so upset about it. And then she saw a bumper sticker on a truck in front of her that said, America, love it or leave it. And that was that turning point for her. And she was like, I'm leaving. I'm going to see what that feels like. I'm actually going to see what that feels like. And so she went and lived, you know, in Italy or something for a year or two, and, you know, came back and had a different relationship to the United States, both more positive and more critical and cynical. But that is something that I think many people have, like, that has been in conversation, COVID notwithstanding, for the last 4 years or so, at a level, at least with our peers, that has not existed since the Vietnam War. You know, this idea of like, should I just go? Maybe I need to go. Where do I go?
Yeah. I mean, it happened during the first Gulf War, like you said. And I just feel like, why should I have to go? You know, yeah. We live in a country that is so chopped up in politics that, you know, when Democrats literally govern 3 million more people than Republicans because of the way our political system chops it up and creates districts where you are rigging elections. People aren't represented. And so the bullies who are the minority are saying leave. It's like, shut up, leave. Yeah. I'm not leaving.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, some Catholics might feel like that too. Like, hey, there are more of us than you think, and why should I have to leave? You should change this because you should reflect what's going on in the cultural climate. That's just not my relationship with religion. And I could sort of see using the same argument.
I think the difference is a religion is a choice, and you are born in a country, and that's for a lot of people, you don't have a choice to live, and why should you have the choice? And two, if there's a lot more of you, then open your mouths and change shit and do something about
it.
Because if we sit back and we don't say anything, and we're like, well, that's just the way it is. There's more of us and I'm a good person. It's like Martin Luther King said, you know, he's not, the problem isn't, you know, and paraphrasing, the problem isn't, you know, the appalling, you know, terrible people. It's the appalling silence of the supposed good people.
That's
and
right.
So, you know, if you are sitting in silence, that is how all of this shit happens. It is how Black people get killed by police officers. It's how abortion laws happen. It's how our environment just turns to garbage. And, you know, it's, you know, my dad used to start saying, Liz, if you take too many stands, you'll stand alone. And I said, Dad, if you stand in the middle of the road, you get hit by a car. Where are we now?
That's a tough argument to beat. Dad got schooled on that one.
Yeah.
What was his response? Was he like, that's a fair point?
He's like, well, he always used to say to me, I raised you to have an opinion and I forgot to tell you it was supposed to be mine.
Yes, indeed.
Fail, Dad, fail.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun. Wonderfuls, it's time for us to check in with ourselves and with each other vis-a-vis our mental health, because this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. If you have grown tired of hearing me talk about how much pain I'm in sometimes with my neck and my herniated disc, then you have a little snapshot into what my heart feels like sometimes. You know, even if everything else in my life is going smoothly, being in physical pain has a real toll on your emotional state, on your moods, on your stress stress levels. And so I have definitely spent time talking to my therapist just about what isn't feeling right physically. So whether you are stressed out about something specific, you are just feeling like you want to talk about something that you're going through because you need a boost, you need to help better understand something that you're dealing with, you can definitely use the chance to unload. So do it. Unload it. Get it out. Talk to somebody who's completely unbiased about your life. Someone I don't have to worry about when I complain about physical pain. They're not going to judge me. They're not going to feel like, oh, I can't believe I'm having to listen to this again. It's so nice and makes me feel so much better to know I'm not always burdening a friend with something like that. BetterHelp is customized online therapy. It offers video, phone, even live chat sessions with your therapist. And I can definitely say it could be more affordable than in-person therapy. So see if it's for you. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and the JV Club listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/JV Club. Have your first session in under 48 hours at betterhelp.com/JV Club.
Congratulations! You've won a ticket to attend an exclusive opportunity in a relaxing environment with two lovers.
Wow. Well, this sounds like a sort of proposition of sorts, but really it's an ad for our podcast. Wonderful. It's a show we do here on Maximum Fun where we talk about things that we like and things that we're into.
I'm Rachel McElroy, and you just heard Griffin McElroy, and we are excited for you to join us as we talk about movies and music and books.
Things like sneezing or the idea of rain.
Can you get news or information you can use?
Absolutely,
so.
You cannot, because we're here to talk to you about pumpernickel bread.
You can find new episodes on Wednesdays.
So catch the wave!
Okay, so you're in high school. You are interested in things that are not gender specific, but just by virtue of that, you're sort of in trouble because you're supposed to like certain things. What else were you into? Like, what was your sort of adolescence? How was that shaped? What were the people that you were hanging out with? What was the music you were listening to?
Oh, well, I mean, I was a wildly like frenetic person. So while I say that, like, the music I listened to was like, I was like an early adopter when punk rock started happening. I was there. You know, yes. And so I really loved The Clash, and I really loved Elvis Costello, and then like really like hardcore bands like UK Subs, and like, you know, I was like went in hard. So I loved punk rock music. I loved hardcore music. But then also, like, we had a kick squad at our school that was not your average halftime Rockette squad. We danced to like Joan Armatrading and Stiff Little Fingers.
Nice.
And like, and so that was really fun. So we were kicking and doing stuff, but it was like totally different. But it was really, you know, it's high school. It's that weird place where fitting in is paramount, and also just defining yourself as one thing so that you can handle it. And I never did that. And so I was with the theater kids and then dance line, and I really love hockey, and I really like to golf, and you know, and like all this stuff. And it was just a hodgepodge of absurdity that nobody ever knew where to put me. So the second somebody would try to throw me into a corner, I'd be popping up in the next place being like, I don't think so. I'm sneaking into I got a fake ID. Bye. So
that's awesome.
And Minneapolis was great for that, you know, like Music Town.
It was big time.
You know, it's a very cultural, like, it's a cultural hub. And it's also, it's a super progressive liberal place. And so what was fun about growing up here was that going into college, a lot of small town queer kids would come to Minneapolis from the Midwest, because Chicago was such a big city that there was the secondary, manageable city.
A little bit of a softer landing.
So we historically, we had the first gay mayor or one of the first gay mayors in the United States in the 1970s. And that's so it was just always a place where, you know, Prince always used to say, like, you just got to be whatever you wanted to be here. And, you know, this is the town, when you think about it, this is the town that raised Prince. And so when you think about that.
That says a lot.
when you think about that, especially since it's, you know, primarily white. And so, indigenous folks, and then, some Black folks migrated up. And then there was a big Vietnamese influx, after the war. The Lutheran Church did a lot of,
like proselytizing and converting?
No,
bringing people,
not even.
What?
It was like, we have the most liberal refugee policy of all 50 states. And so we are a haven for people who are, so it was Hmong, Cambodian, Laotian folks who were refugees from the war. We also have a Somali population that's big and a Syrian population. So we'll probably soon have a big influx of Afghanis as well. So that's what makes it kind of cool to be here. But then on top of it, then, you know, as we see in the news, we have garbage police and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But yes, so high school was a hodgepodge of all of that. And I feel really lucky to be in that sweet spot. I graduated from high school in 1979. And I was in that sweet spot where like painter's pants and vintage clothes were cool. And so you didn't have to have $1 million. Designer stuff wasn't the deal.
Yes, yes.
And you could still go to like thrift stores and buy like clothes by the bag for like nothing and get really cool stuff. And so there wasn't a class thing. Like when I watch movies like Dazed and Confused and Heathers and stuff, like I didn't understand that. We had obviously the popular girls and the cheerleader people and the jocks and stuff like that, but we didn't have that meanness that seems to be a very big theatrical thread. But it's not a thread that was any part of what my life was all about.
Yeah. What about dating? Were you dating it up when you were in high school?
I was. I got pregnant the first time I ever had sex when I was in high school.
Ugh, good for you.
And so, like,
that's fucking terrifying.
Terrifying. And I ended up, you know, scared, alone. You don't want to tell anybody because that's like gossip. So. Yeah. I ended up trying to figure out where to go, and I ended up at one of those. I don't know if you've heard of these fake clinics that are out there being predatory. They're called things like a woman's choice, but really they're run by religious people, and they're wearing like a lab coat that they got off of Amazon.
And as you know, Scientology has done that with many things in Los Angeles. There's a lot in Los Angeles. So you're like, this seems like, oh, it's what now? Oh, I see. Okay, got it. You got me again almost. Yep. You almost got me again.
So they tried to, you know, scare me into lying to me about like how far along I was, how pregnancy works, that I was going to go to hell.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's so scary.
It's so scary. But
I'm so sorry.
I know. It was terrible. I also learned a lot. It also set me on a path of realizing that, like, if nobody asks you your circumstance and doesn't invest in you as a person who's going through a hard time, don't take their counsel, and certainly do not take their morality, because they don't have any morality and their counsel is self-serving. And I learned that at a very young age. Now I change it. Now I've said, if you're not feeding me, fucking me, or paying me, your opinion is at the bottom of things I give a shit about. That is just like where it all goes. You know, but I ended up being able to access abortion at a place. I got on a bus and saw an advertisement and went. And it was an independent clinic. And what's pretty cool is, cut to 150 years later, I'm now on the board of that clinic. And one of my dear friends owns it. So
that's great.
Yeah. But, you know, so high school, I was having fun and, you know, getting knocked up, having sex, having a good time. And I was like, I really wanted to be a history teacher. That was like my jam. I really wanted to teach. I've always been sort of like hammy and theatrical. But and I thought about theater for just a hot second. But really, my dad was a World War II veteran and never talked about it and bottled up a lot of stuff. So I decided I was going to major in European history so I could maybe crack the dad code. And I did a little bit, but shit runs deep.
I'm always so impressed when young people are interested in history. And I know that sounds like a ridiculous thing to say, but I mean, I was a very sensitive, very empathetic, possibly to a destructive point. Like, now you're not helping anyone, you're just useless because you are taking on everyone's pain and you're helping in no way. But I don't think I had, I just didn't, for as much as I was aware of people around me or had empathy for suffering and stuff like that, perhaps because of my sensitivity to those events, history was just not something, history was school. You study history in school, you learn about a bunch of really messy shit that happened that's very sad and upsetting, couple of nice things, and then you do whatever it is that you're interested in doing. But having friends, like, I'm trying to think of any friend. I think I might have had one friend who liked reading historical fiction, and I was like, God, you're smart. You're really smart. You're so, you're so aware. You care about what happened before. Like, you want something set in turn of the century New York? I envy that. It was like I wanted to have that interest. It seems very self-aware and beyond self-aware, extra self-aware in terms of outside of self-aware. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you say cracking the dad code, which kind of obviously makes it, like, brings it back into you emotionally a little bit, but the idea of teaching history, just that seems like a very mature, very cool thing for a teenager to want to do, opposed to like be the lead singer of a band, which you could also want to do at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to have that one thing. But
I loved all that. But I did. I loved all that music, and I loved being part of all of that and the whole scene. And I also just felt like, I think part of the history thing too was just I loved old things. Like, I loved classic movies, and I loved not only new music but like old music, and I'm the youngest by 13 years in my family.
Okay.
And so, like, things that were handed down to me and the historical knowledge of stuff was always really cool. You know, I love big band music. I just always thought it was really, swing dancing scene was really fun. And
you were ahead of your time, because it got popular in like the early 90s.
In the 90s,
sort of,
but
you were
like
right in between.
Were like, you know, doing it and stuff. And it was like, it was all, I loved the glamour. And I also loved, you know, eras of time where it's like, I'd watch old movies about New York. And like, I loved New York, like at the turn of the century. And then I really loved New York in the 40s and then the 50s and then the 70s, you know? And so it was like, all of it was maybe predicated by all the ways New York was portrayed historically. I fell in love with all of it. I thought it was all really cool. And it was just, and I think it's why I was like, in my high school yearbook, I wrote like future plans to move out and live somewhere in Manhattan, you know? And I didn't really even sometimes knew what that meant. You know, I would sort of conflate like Woody Allen and John Belushi and Andy Warhol sort of all together. And, you know, I did always love musicals too. And so like, piano bars were something that I just thought, oh my God, sitting at a piano or listening to someone sing show tunes is like everything. So I don't know that I was smart or anything. I think that I was just curious. And I think that I often feel like curiosity is a vital organ. And it, like, if you weren't allowed to be curious and you were just handed a way to live, which I think for generations, that's the way, that's what happened for people. And so you would find your outlets other places. I think I would probably die. I don't think I
could live. Ironic too, because that's sort of, I mean, that's many people's concept, sort of sense or theory of evolution, is that one of the most, if not the most important things about humanity is curiosity, right? That is what evolves you past being a creature that just does this, that, and the other thing, and then makes babies, and then that's it.
Yeah.
So you feel sort of, I mean, us and raccoons, that's why I love raccoons. Like, you feel a responsibility, like, hey, we get this. We got this genetic trait. Let's use it. Possibly not to make bombs, but let's use it. Let's be curious, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And I think that, like, killing curiosity is really how I think we get to this very tribalistic, creepy place that we're in. You know,
well, it's like fear replaces curiosity, right? It's like you're going to have something, so you're going to have fear instead of curiosity. You're going to just look at the unknown is now scary, not interesting, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, to not even want to know and decide for yourself whether or not you enjoy it, think it's right, think it's fair, want to fight for it, want to fight against it or whatever, is always so bizarre to me. It's like, don't you want to decide those things on your own? Like, don't you want to have it? Like, what is the fear of having an experience? Like, what's the worst thing that happens? You don't like it. You never have to do it again. Unless you're like, you know, cliff diving or something. I don't know, like, what is, and even in little ways, you know, I get very irritated with people who are like, I'm a picky eater. It's like, no, you're not. You haven't tried a bazillion things. You're a dull eater. You're a curious eater. You are not picky. You just have never opened yourself up to trying to put something in your mouth, deciding whether you like it, and spitting it out if you don't. That's like about the lowest lift. Like, that is like,
to me, I hear you.
Same person.
I mean, I think you're right. See, this is where my uber empathy kicks in, for better or for worse, because I immediately go to this place of, but maybe you're saying this too, of like, what's that really about? Do you know what I mean? Like, that is what that feels like to me. Like, is that a control thing? Because I empathize with that. We all have our ways of perhaps wanting to feel like we have some measure of control in our lives. And maybe some people's journey is learning to let go more and more and more and more as you get older. And part of that is the fear, and part of that is embracing the curiosity, because if you're curious, you're going to put yourself in situations that you're not in control of, because you have no idea what to expect. But if you are limiting, if you're making your world small in these very small ways, frankly, maybe there's something else going on there, you know? And I know it's not my job to help people figure it out, but if I care about someone, then I do kind of have this impulse to be like, hey, but what's that about?
Yeah.
Like, I can't leave it there. What's that about, do you think? You know? So I don't know. I mean, I guess we have different ways too of like sort of wanting to reach other people. And thank God thank us that there are so many different ways to kind of get at that, whether it is something like Air America, or it is being a therapist, or it is being a good community member, or it is being a great cop. For those of the, you know, because they're out there, I think. I know they are. You know, that there are those different, like, that we feel called to or interested in or driven to make stuff or be available in different ways from each other to hopefully get at some of that stuff and kind of pick it away and help clear it, help flush it. Do you know what I mean? Help flush the system in some way.
Yeah.
As far as I want to get into this ridiculous game that I play.
I love a game.
At the end. Okay, good. Well, it's a MASH game, which is Mansion, Apartment, Shack, House. And it's this sort of it's fairly timeless. Like, it definitely was around long before I was a kid, and it maintains itself today. And it's essentially like a wish fulfillment kind of ridiculous, but it's a way to kind of leave thinking about things you like. But before I do that, that is something I wanted to ask is, you know, because you have been a part of some really impactful, is that a word? You know, it's not like less than comedy fluff. What did you feel driven to do that to communicate to people? Or was it kind of like, I don't know, this is just what I think is fun and what I like talking about, or what I like hearing people talk about? Do you know what I mean? Was there, I don't know if there's an answer to that, but what's your response when I kind of put that out there?
I am a person who started out my stand-up career just talking about my experiences and being a person. And even then it was like, are you going to talk about things that are about women? And I was like, I don't have another lens with which to talk about the world. And so if that offends you, again, I listen all day long to people who have experiences I'll never have, i.e. straight men in comedy, and I laugh. And I think it's funny if they make it funny. So why is it that there is this block that an experience that a woman brings to the party is not going to be something you laugh at because it's not your experience? It's super bizarre. But then I really had an epiphany, and I've always been a political person, but I didn't bring it to the stage really until going back to the Barbara Kingsolver, you know, first Gulf War. And I was on a blind date, and I will never forget, we were on a blind date and we went to the sports bar, and instead of sports being on, it was the war. And it was horrifying because it was so, it felt like a mini series. There was graphics and theme songs and, yeah. You know,
oh, boy,
hot guys
that.
On the roof. And
Theme songs. Yeah, yeah. Like just like hard hitting, cool action sounding songs.
And,
yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself, are they reporting on the war or trying to sell me a war? Like just kind of thinking.
Yeah.
And like 5 minutes later, my date's like, this is really cool. And I was like, oh my God, they just sold him the war. And from that point forward, it was, if there was anything close to having an epiphany about like how I wanted to then change the way that I talked about things and that I wanted to have something more to say, that coupled with the fact that if you're a woman who stands on stage and decides that your opinions matter, that's a radical act in and of itself. And people are going to judge you anyway. So you might as well say something, you know? And so it's like, if you're going to judge me for my dick jokes, I feel like I want to say something. And so I think I did 2 one-woman shows, you know, just about the war, a Gulf War, and then just about, you know, feminism and politics. And so it was something that I wanted to do because I felt like the media was derelict long before we talked about the derelict media. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to hold the media accountable as well as the people in it. And so I always wanted to make fun of the news because I think that people would give the news a pass and just talk about like politicians and stuff like that. And, you know, and it was like, Saturday Night Live was funny and I loved it. But like even Weekend Update, you know, they hardly ever had.
Yeah, it wasn't like meta commentary.
Or shoulder graphics during Weekend Update and stuff. And so I was like, I want to like become the news and look like them and sound like them and then reveal who they are by being them. And so it was definitely intentional. It wasn't just like, this is kind of fun. Wonder where this will go. I had no idea that, you know, I knew it would resonate with people just because of my stand-up act. Yeah. But I didn't know to the degree with which it would resonate. And I didn't know that it would sustain. I honestly, like, The Daily Show lives because media remains derelict in being better.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Are you still in touch with Brian Unger?
All the time. He's one of my best friends.
Oh God, I just love him.
He's the greatest. Yeah, Brian.
We
dated for 4 years.
Oh yeah, nice.
And then we had a production.
I like that pairing. Whatever form it takes. I like the pairing as a couple, but if it moves into the producer or it moves into friendship, like that's just a good pairing.
Well, you know, when somebody decides that you're not the exact right gender for them, it kind of takes on a whole new situation. Best friends, produce things together. Ugh. I talk to him a couple times a week. My family are really close. I love Brian. I say that anybody who... at whatever point you started watching The Daily Show, Brian Unger is the person that created that correspondent character and
100%.
Laid down the prototype so profoundly and just 100%. Never gets enough credit. Yep.
Absolutely agree. Yeah, that is a person that, you know, we keep coming, unlike the two of you, we sort of have this like, you know, big loops of time in between coming back together to try to work on something together. But I would only be freaking delighted if I got to work on something with him again.
He's such a good dude.
He's just so great.
Yep.
Oh, and also like, you know, sort of balancing, and I'm sure you guys talk about this all the time. My sweetie taught a comedy and journalism class at Second City. He's coming from straight journalism, being like an editor of alt weeklies his whole kind of career, but also being a very funny person. And Brian and I went in together to be guests in the class and sort of talked about our experiences, his many more than mine, in journalism or in the media. And like, it is so hard to be someone as smart and sensitive and just sharp as he is, and have to still weather the actual media.
Yeah.
You know, because he's more immersed in it than, and thank God he is, because he's a great voice in places where there's a dearth of those voices. But that also means that he has to weather a lot of bullshit. And that just
seems
tiring.
Well, that was it. So, I mean, when we were dating, it was before The Daily Show and into the creation of The Daily Show. And it was like, you are miserable. You are a journalist. They're sending you to the OJ trial and they're sending you to do these horrible things and you hate it. You know, you have a choice to make. Are you going to, do you want to come and make fun of them and hold them accountable? And he was like, thought about it. And he was like, I do, but I'm not a comic. And I'm like, but you're funny. And you also understand dry humor and a funny, there's no one funnier than a disgruntled reporter.
That's right.
Nobody.
Well said.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Somewhere between science and superstition, there is a podcast.
Look, your daughter doesn't say she's a demon. She says she's the devil himself.
That thing is not my daughter. And I want you to tell me there's a show where the hosts don't just report on fringe science and spirituality, but take part themselves.
Well, there is, and it's Ono, Ross, and Carrie on Maximum Fun.
This year, we actually became certified exorcists.
So yes, Carrie and I can help your daughter.
Or we can just talk about it on the show.
Ono, Ross, and Carrie on MaximumFun.org.
Okay, I'm going to give you categories. The only thing you need to do is sort of speak from your gut. You're going to give me three answers for each thing. And at the end, I'm going to do this very uncomplicated, eeny, meeny, miny, mo type of calculating. And then we're going to give you this sort of alternate universe or even just this MASH, because the game is called MASH, we're going to give you this future. And it's going to be fantastical, to say the least.
Oh my God, so, it sounds hard, but all I have to do is answer
but
things,
yeah,
right?
All you have to do is answer with things you like.
Okay.
So it should be pretty painless. Okay. For example, first category, we'll come in with a Minneapolis soft landing for the busy Chicago of MASH games. Three foods that in this reality, maybe you're allergic to it or you just can't have it because you had it one time in this faraway place and you're like, oh, I always want one of those, blah, but I can't get it. We're going to give you in this reality the option of just snapping your fingers and you can just have it in perpetuity wherever you are with zero ramifications.
That's easy. So Fagry's was a restaurant that I worked at.
Great.
And they had this Chinese chicken salad that was really, really great. And they also made the best béarnaise, and they would serve a basket of hot fries with a side of béarnaise.
Oh, yes.
And that was delightful. All Minneapolis-based that I can't get anymore?
No, anywhere. Anywhere in the world.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so there was a candy growing up. Bitto Honey.
Yes.
Made something called Bitto Licorice.
Oh, crap. Okay,
so
never heard of it.
It lasted about 10 minutes. I'm sure I'm the only person that liked it.
I would have liked it.
And it was chewy like Bitto Honey, but it was like a cross between a licorice and a caramel. But
yeah,
it was
so it still had that salty, sweet, yeah,
it
the
was
salty
so good.
Sweetness.
And it had purple and black wrapper. And I terribly miss.
Great.
And then I know I'm gonna kick myself.
That is the one downside of this, is that
when I go,
you'll definitely
that thing,
an hour from now you'll be like, anymore. Oh, come on. Like it'll come to you in an hour.
I would say I would say, the third.
And you can also just say, like, look, I love, you know, Rocky Road ice cream. I wish I could eat a gallon of it and not get sick. Like,
well, also, give like, me that, I'm you know? Also, I have to say, I'm just going to go back because I love licorice. Bridgman's had a licorice ice cream. There was an old-timey ice cream store called Bridgman's that had a licorice ice cream that was really good with chunks of black licorice in it. That was really great.
I think I like all the things that people say you either like it or you don't.
Me
like,
too.
Pretty much.
Me too.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I'm always the one that's like, cilantro? More, please.
More, please.
Licorice?
Uni.
Great. Let's
like
do
uni.
It.
You can keep uni.
I don't like uni, and I don't like a real soft, rubbery scallop either. Now that you bring up uni.
No.
Well, there you go. Okay.
Fantastic.
All right. Next category, three films that you can jump into and just be in that world whenever you want. It's almost like a little mini vacation. You could go into Breakfast at Tiffany's for 5 minutes or never if you don't like that movie, but you could go into some of these New York movies that you grew up loving.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is like, oof, I got to hang out with this character. It was amazing.
Yeah. I would say The Women.
Oh, great.
I love that movie. It's so fun and catty and I love it.
Yeah.
I would say probably When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah, it's great. Come on.
I mean, it's just fun and New York-y. And I would say An American in Paris.
Okay, great. All right, next category, romance, sexy times. Three people, could be characters, could be actors from way back when. Anybody in any phase, we're going to sort of resuscitate them. That sounds like I'm talking about a corpse. But, you know, you can. It can be anybody from any. It could be a book, could be a cartoon character. Three that you'd like to have a little sexy times with.
Oh, well, Gregory Peck is like my one true love.
Yeah. I got to put him in here, right? I got to put him in.
For
what
sure.
era, though? What era?
I
like
would
a Roman holiday era or a...
Atticus Finch.
Yeah, there it is. Great.
Okay. Like, if I only get three. So I'm going to say Viggo Mortensen as Aragorn in The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, great.
And then I'm going to say Idris Elba just living his life.
He's somehow not of this world and yet so incredibly of this world.
I mean,
both parts are just the most delicious and wonderful.
Oh my goodness gracious.
What
yes.
a dreamboat. Oy, oy, oy. Okay. Next category, let's do collaborations. And I don't care what that means. You could record an album with Elvis Costello, whether or not you feel like you have it. In this world, that's not opposite world. In this alternate universe, you can do whatever you want. So whether it's making a movie with Babs or recording an album with Elvis Costello or writing something with Dorothy Parker, whatever you want, three collaborations that it would be fun to get to work on.
It's really hard because like I have wildly different interests and some of my dreams have come true. Like I've collaborated with Rachel Maddow, so I did that. I would say,
well, if someone's not around anymore, then that's a good one too. Because you're like, ah, man, this person isn't even alive anymore. I wish I could have.
Molly Ivins,
great,
great Texas writer and political like genius.
Wonderful.
Prince and David Bowie.
Oh, yes,
that's three, isn't it?
Oh, that's a fabulous three.
Yeah, Prince.
That's
and
a
David
holy
Bowie.
Trinity right there. That's great. Okay. Next category. Give me three places in the world that you would like to have a second home. It could be a bustling, busy second home in the middle of a city somewhere, or it could be like, you know, a cabin in the middle of nowhere. Anywhere in the world. And it's like, we can teleport you there. You don't have to, you know.
I don't have to worry about it. Paris.
Great.
East Hampton, New York.
Great.
And the Amalfi Coast.
Beautiful. Okay. Last category, give me, let's do three skills that you don't feel like you have in this. And it could be as simple as like, I wish I had, you know, this is not simple. I wish I could take apart a car or a thing or, you know, but it could also be like, I was an amazing dancer, like with all the flexibility in the world. Three skills that we're just going to sort of hand you, you'd love to be handed in this alternate universe.
I wish I could play piano.
Great.
I wish I was a great handyman, like encompassing, plastering, wiring, light plumbing.
Yeah.
Handy person.
Same.
And then I wish I could start fires from sticks.
Oh, great. Fire starter. Are you kidding me? Absolutely. I'm like enrolled to take not a survival, like I'm suddenly going to become a survivalist and build a bomb shelter person, but like like how to do that and, you know, two more days of other stuff like that, that I was supposed to do right before COVID started. Now I'm just waiting for it to become available again. But it was one of those, like, I gotta find out how to do some of this stuff. I just want to know how to do this, you know? So heartily approve. Okay. Give me a number between 1 and 7.
3.
Great. Okay. We are almost done. This will round out our podcast episode. Would you like to take this moment to subtly vamp and tell people what they should be doing, what they should be caring about, where to find you, anything like that that you want people to be aware of?
Sure. I think that there's a couple of things. I am going to be doing stand-up on the West Coast in Seattle and Portland and San Francisco in early November. And you can check Bands in Town to see all my dates. And I'm doing a big Minneapolis New Year's Eve extravaganza, which I always do a big year in review. And then my organization, Abortion Access Front, is doing a super fun online streaming fundraiser called Do Re Me Too, where great musicians are covering the most sexist songs ever.
Oh, that's a great
idea. And
putting
a whole new twist on it. And we have Amanda Palmer and Jill Sobule and Busy Phillips and Sandra Bernhardt and all these
great
people. And that's September 23rd. And
nice.
Information for that, you can go to aafront.org/DRMT.
Okay, fantastic. All right, well, I have the results of this alternate universe, fabulous life. I am excited to tell you about. First of all, I got to tell you that you have not only can you jump into the movie An American in Paris, which gives you Paris, you also have a house on the Amalfi Coast. So we can just tick off both Paris and Amalfi Coast.
Nice.
There's a lot of juicy stuff in here. I'm actually quite envious. This is really, really, really good.
I want you
to know that you have you're creating something fabulous with the sublime David Bowie.
Oh my gosh.
You are, this doesn't surprise me because you are, and I know that, let me just put it this way. Yes, you are working with David Bowie, and I think I know part of what you'll be bringing to the collaboration because, you know, when you were a teenager and you just imagine going into piano bar and you know, how fun that would be and how lovely it would be in New York. In this iteration, not only do you walk in there, but the pianist is like, ah, Liz, come on, sit down, play something for us. Come on, play something for us.
Oh, my God.
Because you're a marvelous pianist. You also have these two I want to imagine, just for me, I want to imagine these things happening side by side. I just want to imagine you feeding, as you also enjoy it, you feeding Idris Elba the Fagri's delicious chicken salad,
yes,
and the Bernays sauce with the hot fries.
Oh my God, yes.
Look at that. So yeah, that's what this is all about. I've left with like this sort of delicious feeling of all of these wonderful things.
What a wonderful life I'm having.
That's right.
I got to check back in with my life because I feel like it's going great.
Thank you so much for doing this. This is such
God,
a pleasure.
Janet, hopefully we get to see each other soon.
I know.
And be amongst our nearest and dearest together.
I know. I do too. And I love what you're up to. And thank you for, you know, just helping women feel like, you know, they all got a voice and their voice deserves to be heard.
That's right.
It's a big deal.
Lead by example. When you show that you can be a loudmouth and still have a wonderful life, it allows people to also decide to be loudmouths, which I appreciate.
That's right. That's right. All right, everybody else, I will talk to you next week on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember one. save kittens from trees, or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees. Maybe we should move someplace new and build time machines to go and get us.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.